for this evening, George W. from Phoenix.
My name is George. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, George.
It's good to be here. It's good to be sober. I'll start the clock.
So you don't have to keep ducking down.
Oh, okay. That's what can happen to you if you stay sober long enough.
So,
vision for you, newcomers. I've been sober since September 12th, 2008. My home group is out in Chandler, Arizona. Simple Truth Group meets on Wednesday nights, 7 o'clock. If you're ever in Arizona and need a meeting, I happen to like it. I guess I should thank, I'm not sure if I should thank Larry or Joe or both. Both for roping me into this. But it's good to be here, man. And I loved seeing all the hands of the newcomers. Welcome. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I can share with you one thing I've learned from staying here is AA really is probably the worst thing that was suggested to me at the time that I didn't want to do that has ended up to be the best thing that's ever happened in my life. You know, and I'm not saying that because it might sound good from a podium or my sponsor suggests it. It's just the truth. You know, my experience is that when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I do not want this to be the answer. I can assure you of that, right? I take a look at what's going on outside and how early you have to get here, right? And there's got to be something easier, right? But what I found through a good home group and strong sponsorship is a way to live on a day-to-day basis where I don't have to take a drink. I mean, that's what it's all about. And I'm thankful for that. So my job tonight's kind of share my experience, strength, and hope, and kind of tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today, or really what I'm trying to be like. Because there's good days and bad days, you know. I'm not a perfect member of Alcoholics Anonymous just because I have a suit on tonight and someone asked me to come up in front of a microphone. It's not the truth. It's really kind of funny to get asked to do stuff like this, man. Like, I grew up down in Ocean Beach on the seawall, you know, pounding 40s and hanging out with the skate kids and harassing homeless people and, you know, and tagging on stuff and just all that kind of little petty vandalism. And, you know, we thought we were criminals. And so it's funny, right? Like, that kid, you know, who other kids' parents don't want him over in their house unattended. You know, that's who we like in Alcoholics Anonymous. The worst you are, the more we like you. And if you're not sure about that, tell someone the truth about you and see if it isn't true, you know. So what I was like really is I'm a corner cutter by nature. I never want to put 100% into anything. If I can get away with 60, great. If that will get me by, that's what I'm doing. Even better, if I can con you into doing it for me and I can get 100% of the credit, that's really my wheelhouse, you know. And so I cheat and I lie, you know, and that's natural. That's before a drink. I don't know where that comes from. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that's alcoholism. I don't, you know, I'm not delving into that debate, but that's how I act, right? And so what I'm like is around 13 or 14 years old, I get a little bit of curiosity around alcohol. I'm living up in Anaheim and a kid comes up to visit me, one of my buddies, and mom and dad are out for whatever reason, and mom keeps vodka in the freezer. It struck me that if you mix vodka and orange juice, probably wouldn't have to taste the vodka. And it also, I intuitively knew that you can just fill it back up with water. I mean, right? I don't know how I knew that. But I knew, like, no, we're just going to pour this much out. We'll put it water, put it back in. So we had, like, two screwdrivers, and we split them, right? No big deal. And we went to the arcade. That's it. That's my first drink. That's it. And nothing bad happened. You know, and I didn't even really feel the magic of alcohol. And I was thinking about it because that's, like, the first drink, right? And I don't remember a phenomenon of craving kicking in that the doctor's opinion talks about. You know, I didn't shoot off to detention and drop out of school. It was just like that was decent, you know. And then about a year later, I moved back down here. And something I've always done is we pull up with the moving van. There's this picnic table outside. of our apartment, and all the little hoodlum kids like to hang out at there and smoke cigarettes, you know, and do little 14 to 16-year-old hoodlum things at picnic tables. And right before the moving van stopped, I see that group of kids, and I know I want in. I don't know what they're doing, right, but I want in. And to confirm that, my mom said, I don't think I want you hanging out with those kids, right? And so that's, come on now. And so I hung out with those kids, right, and they drank and they smoked, and like I said, they tagged. And something changed from that first, I was thinking about this earlier today, something changed between that first drink and really the next drink that I can remember. Because the next drink that I can remember, the same friend had come into town, and we went down, and by that time, I know that you can go down to a convenience store that's down the street. And I know that if you ask enough people and you're willing to be uncomfortable, like you're asked to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, that someone will buy it for you, right? You just got to take no a couple times, and that's fine, right? And but so we get a couple 40s, man, and I remember we went down to park on West Point Loma right before you get into Ocean Beach, and we got two 40s of Laser and a pack of smokes, you know, and that's just heaven for an unintended 14-year-old alcoholic like myself. And the difference between that first drink and this drink was, is I guess I'd had beer in between then, and I don't have a taste for beer. I don't like beer. I didn't like beer for a long time. But I've seen what it does to you, right? I've watched it at parties, and I know that if you put enough of that in you, it'll change you, and it'll look like you're having a good time. And I wanted to have a good time. And I intuitively knew that you gotta drink that big old beer fast, you know. So I'm pounding away on it and trying to gag it down with cigarettes, right? And The difference between me and other drinkers that makes me an alcoholic presented itself that day, because I remember I'm not even talking to my buddy, right? I'm trying to choke this thing down as fast as I can, and my buddy looks over, you know, and he's half behind, and so I'm at half, and he's only drank a quarter, and he says the weirdest thing to me. He looks over at me, he says, I said, what's the matter, man? Come on, let's get this done, dude. And he said, man, I'm starting to feel it. I think I'm good. What the hell's wrong with you, man? We bought it. You got to drink it. You know what I mean? I don't know where that came from, but yeah, I mean, I pounded mine, right? I threw up in that park, and I threw up in some lady's bathroom who we used to go over and hang out with, and it was miserable. I'm trying to impress. This is an older chick, and she used to let me come over and hang out, and I just destroyed her bathroom and left her with my friend, But there was a magic 15 minutes that happened from that park on the walk to her house, where something unlocked and it changed, right? And I just knew from that moment that everyone that was in a position of authority in my life was lying to me about hard work and school and apply yourself, you know, and if you would try, it's all a sham, dude. Get good grades. No, I want to crack 40s in the park with my boys, man. And I want to stretch that 15 minutes. That's what I want, right? So the next morning when I've got the trouble to deal with, I don't care. I don't care if I'm grounded. I know how to sneak out. It's not a big deal. But what my head, also what I found with alcoholics, is my head intuitively focuses on what I will do better to manage next time, right? And that's a theme that's going to play itself out over the next years of my drinking career. So really from 14 to 28 when I get sober, it's really just, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I've done a lot of drugs, you know, and because weed was easier to get when I was younger, but alcohol, it always starts and ends with alcohol for me. And alcohol has always been there. Alcohol hits a sweet spot inside of me that not really anything else does. You know, by 17, I'm kicked out of public schools, continuation schools, home schools. You know what I mean? I don't go to class. I don't want to. I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it. I want to run the streets with my little hoodlum friends and be degenerates. And, and by that time, my mom passed away when I was 14. And I remember I was there. I had to call the ambulance, and the ambulance took her away. And that lady I was talking about took me over to her house, and we got all medicated up, man, and she gave me, you know, Rumpelmans and Jaeger is what they used to, it's terrible. And their favorite game was seeing how much they could feed the 14-year-old before he puked and passed out, right? Which was, it was fine with me because I got free booze. But I was over there, you know, and I remember going to the hospital. Mom was on, like, ventilator tubes, and she was in a coma and like, unresponsive. And when our book talks about selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of our problems, I can 100% tell you what that looks like in my life, even at 14 years old, is I stood at the foot of that bed, and I had absolutely no concern for what was she going to be okay? The only thought that was in my mind, right, is how does this play out with me getting out of school? How many days can I stay at this friend's house and be able to really soak this up, right? Because I also don't think anything more serious is going to happen, right? It always comes around. And that wasn't the case, right? But so I've been selfish and self-centered from the beginning. But, you know, so after that, right, it's just you don't understand. My case is different. That's my theme song. I like to play that pity guard on counselors and judges and, you know, therapists, right, is, oh, poor George lost his mom. You know, he's acting out, right? And so I got that trump card to justify my behavior, and I love pulling that thing out, right? And so pretty much I did what I wanted, you know, almost as close to when I wanted to do it for the next couple years, and at 17, I'm living with my grandma, and she has to kick me out because I won't come home on the weekends. You know, and I also, this is how much alcohol means to my life. It's Sunday night. I hadn't been home in probably 3 days. I was supposed to be going to homeschool, and I hadn't been there in like 2 weeks, and my grandma gets a hold of me, or I called her to tell her I wasn't going to come home that night. You know, I was supposed to be home, and she says, don't bother coming home. She said, you don't have to come home. And I remember I hung up the phone and I looked at my buddies and I went, sweet, it's on, man, come on. Let's get it going, you know. I don't got to go home, dude. And like 3 minutes later, like I'm sitting there and I'm like, does she mean like tonight? Or, you know, is that like a don't come home, don't come home? So I called her back, you know, and I'm like, hey, what did you mean by that? And she said, yeah, have your little degenerate friend swing you by in the morning and you can pick your stuff up. We can't have you in the house anymore. All right, so cool, man. Sorry, you know, sucks for you, but thanks. I'll get along just fine. And that's another thought that pervades my life is this idea that I'm managing what's going on exceptionally well. Right? And I have this delusion about what's going on in my life that makes it okay through it's a delusion. I'm not in touch with reality. You know, a 17-year-old who doesn't have a place to go, that's not managing well. You know, but in my head, it was like, sweet, man, no need to shut the party off. You know, let's let it rip how I want, right? And that's another one of my theme songs, man, is if you will just leave me alone and let me drink the way I want to, everything will be okay. You'll see. You know, and I mean it. I absolutely mean it. And so, you know, 17, 18, 19, running with college kids, and I finally got a tolerance to alcohol. And here's what would plague me from probably 21 until I got sober is I finally got a tolerance to booze. And what would happen would be we would have a party. It'd be scheduled, right? People are going to come over. It'd be at my house or something, right? And I don't know about you, but I have to party before the party, right? I got to like pregame to get ready to game. And so, you know, I start the party early with a couple friends, right? And, you know, everybody comes over and everything's great. We were supposed to do something the next day. And at some point in that night, I'll have a blackout, you know? And so I'll go on about my business and I won't remember what happened. But what'll kick my butt for the next, you know, I don't know, 8 years, 7 years, whatever, is that next morning, my head is working before my eyes are awake. That's a weird feeling, right? I've talked to some drunks. It's like it's been thinking at me before I'm really aware that it's been thinking at me. Before my eyelids open and before I can get up and put my feet to the ground, right, I've got this nasty, weird feeling hanging over me. And it's like shame and guilt and remorse. And I know that today, but before I just knew there was this nasty feeling inside my stomach, man. And what that was, right, is I'd had another night where I would have to walk down that hallway to the apartment everybody goes to when they're not at my place, and I would have to sit in front of that group of friends who I would tell you are family, right? Because I don't have mine because they threw me away. This is what my head tells me. And I would have to sit in front of them, man, and I would have to listen to them tell me about the things that I did that night. Things that I can't understand how I would put my group of friends through that. You know, the dangerous situations that I will put my group of friends in when I'm drunk and having a good time. They would tell me that, man, and I remember we'd sit on this nasty couch, dude, and they'd be like, did you have a good time last night? And everybody'd have a little smirk, and I hate that. And it's like, all right, you know, let's just get it over with, man. What did I do? And they would tell me, man, and I would wanna crawl in between the cracks in the cushions of the couch. Because I don't have a defense for why I acted like that, man. You know, I know it's out of line, dude. And I don't know why I would treat people I love that way. And that scene would repeat itself over and over and over again. And what happens in my life is I can hold a group of friends for only a period of time. Until you figure out what George is about. And George is about doing what George wants to do when he wants to do it. And if you're on board with it, then we're friends. And if you're not, then you got to go. You got to go. You know? And if you took me out to party and you have to go home because you have to go to work and I don't, you probably need to let me use the keys then and I'll drop you off. You know, that's... And $20 would help the process, you know? And I couldn't understand that, man. I can't understand why that happens. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, right, and I'm reading with my sponsor in the doctor's opinion, as it talks about that phenomenon of craving, right, is once I put a drink in me, man, is I can't really tell you with any amount of certainty when it's going to stop. For me, it's a progress. I normally have to run out of money, right, and then someone I love has to run out of money, and then I have to stop writing hot checks. Is the time the party ends, right? And that just goes on for years, man. And so what happened is, I was 26, 27 years old, and you know, I'm drinking in the morning, man. The mail piles up. I can't pay bills anymore. I don't know why. There's money in the checking account, man. I just can't seem to deal with opening a mailbox on a repeated basis and addressing whatever is sent to me. I don't know why that is. I know that if I'm going to get up in the morning and if I'm going to do anything, like go to the store and get cigarettes and more alcohol, I got to have a couple drinks in me. You know, and I don't know when that happened, right? I don't have a date and time. I just know that it's very slowly. And what is it? Chuck C. talks about, I think, or it's Norm out, one of those guys, talks about seconds and inches, right? I concede little things on an incremental basis, man. And I look back a year later, right? And it's like, oh my God, how did I get here? Oh, it was, you know? And so I was drinking every day, man. And it's not a party anymore. You know, it's not Friday night and I want to have fun. It's Tuesday morning and I need to deal with the wreck that my life has become. And the only little bit of sanity I get is after I take a good couple hard swigs off that bottle, man, and my head quiets down for just a second. You know, and that's really the only relief I've gotten in my life those last couple years, man. And so I'm not chasing good times with friends. I'm chasing trying to deal with what I've done to my friends in the process of me having a good time. You know, and that's not a cool spot to be in for a drunk like me. And the worst times, I remember I would sit on the edge of the bed in the morning with whatever was left from the bottle from the night before. And I would sit there and I would look at the bottle and I would cry. And I'd sit on the back bed of my girlfriend's house because she let me in because I can't have an apartment anymore. Because I get thrown out for trying to fight like the repairman at 10 o'clock in the morning and go to the drunk tank, you know, and I have no recollection of any, but I would sit there, man, and I'd look at that bottle and I would tell myself, dude, if you drink that today, like this is going to be the last day you stay in this house and you're never going to get this relationship back and you don't have anywhere else to go and you know that's going to happen if you take that drink, man. And the reason I would cry is because I knew that it was only a matter of time before I would convince myself how it's absolutely impossible to not take that drink to shut my head up. And I did that for the last couple of months. you know, and when you're in that kind of pain, right? There's a level of loneliness that I've found that really I only can connect with other alcoholics have experienced it, man. It's sitting in a room full of people, dude, and just knowing none of them are like you, man. And I'm so alone, and my case is so different, right? I'm terminally unique, is what the counselors used to say. And I have seen many. It's all right, you know. It's all right. But so, you know, I'm with this girl for like 7 years, man. And the end for me, this isn't unmanageable, right? Is my girlfriend now, right, when I'm out of money, is she starts with hiding her purse under the bed. And then I realize, well, if I get you drunk enough, you won't wake up or see my shadow when I get the money out of your purse because I need to go out at night, right? Because I've drank during the day and I've triggered that craving, and so I have to go out at night, right? And then it was the wallet and the car keys go underneath the pillow because I won't stay out of her purse when I run out of money and when I need to finish off what I've started. And then I got so good at getting it out of there and getting her nephew to get it out of there is then it literally at the end is she would sleep with her car keys and her credit cards inside of the pillowcase at night. Because I won't leave your money alone, man, because I've got to shut my head up and I know what does it. You know, and it doesn't matter that she would sit and cry and tell me, please stay home tonight. You know, and I wouldn't even lie to her anymore. Because the only thing at that point I could control in my life was the fact that I wasn't going to lie to you about the things I was doing. See, I've tried to stop and control and moderate. I have tried. I've tried everything I know, right? And it always ends up worse, dude. So the one thing I can control is that I won't lie to her about it anymore. And I just have to look at her and tell her I'm going to go. You know? And so again, I'm sitting in that back bedroom, man, and really the only reason I didn't commit suicide is because I didn't want to do it in her house and I didn't want to hurt her one more time. It's the only reason. And I thought about renting a hotel room, and then I was like, Jesus, man, like even on my way out with my best thinking, like the poor cleaning lady's going to come in, you know, at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, right? And have to find like a dead drunk in the bathtub, man. And I'm like really, I don't have an out, right? Because I've been to rehab. I get that I'm an alcoholic. I didn't do anything, but I read and I acknowledged, so it should be fixed, right? That's an attitude I have. So once I admit it's a problem, I'm forgiven and it's fixed, right? Isn't that? I mean, that's what I would think. And there's just no door number three, dude. I've seen AA. I've seen my mom get sober right before she passed. And I've been to your meetings. I've been, you know, sent by courts, man. And again, I went in treatment, dude, and I get what you're saying, right? But I can't go into meetings, just didn't fix it. Why is that? I know it's a problem, and I want help. And for whatever reason, man, I was checked into this rehab for the second time, and my aunt gave me a shot. And she said, I said, I was in Arkansas at the time. I said, I think I need to come home. And she said, we think you need help. And I remember I was in the car with my buddy, man. You know, and all that macho stuff, we don't ask for help. And I don't know why, just yes came out of my mouth. I was like, okay. And I went into rehab, and I got in there, and I was listening, and I think I would have told you in the first rehab that, yeah, I'm absolutely hopeless. I'm willing to do anything. But that's because I don't know what willing to do anything actually looks like in Alcoholics Anonymous the way I was shown. See, I don't understand that willingness and being willing to do anything to not have to go back to living that life means showing up 20 minutes before and staying 20 minutes after a meeting, right? What does that have to do with anything? What does that have to do with my problems, right? And my sponsor would tell me, you've been dealing with your problems for 28 years. Look where you are, bud. You know, you're in a babysitting facility for grown adults who don't know how to live, man. You know? I mean, seriously, dude. Just in a sober living, 28 years old, like I did that to me. My sponsor would make that entire. I remember sitting there talking one time, and he's like, dude, you don't get it. He said, you have been looking out for you your entire life. You have always had your best interests at heart. Look where you are. That's what you do to you. Oh, thanks, John. That's uplifting. And but I got in with a group of guys who were like that, And for me, the language of the heart that it talks about in the literature, right, is harsh. It's harsh. And I didn't agree with it a lot of the times. And if you're new, the best, well, I don't know if it's the best thing, right? One of the most profound things I found in Alcoholics Anonymous is when I talked with my sponsor and we started talking about what we were about to do, he made it very clear to me. He said, I'm not going to ask you to do anything I haven't done or I don't do. He said, that's point number one. He said, another thing is, he said, I don't really care if you like it. You don't have to agree with it. He said, we only care that you do it. And I was like, okay, that's enough, right? I said, you mean it? I can hate this meeting that you make me sit in? Because I did. I hate it. It's a men's meeting, man. There's no, if you're 45 days sober, fresh out of rehab, dude, I do not want to be hanging around with a bunch of dudes, man. I need a girl in my life to fix this for me, you know, preferably one with transportation and a debit card. And my sponsor was like, he's like, yeah, no, you know, your home group's, the, you know, I didn't get to pick my home group. He told me, he said, you will be here every Monday night unless you're sick, dead, or out of town. I guess, well, how sick, right? Well, what constitutes being sick, John? And, but I did, man, I sat in that meeting, and that group of guys is, they're, they're big book dumpers. They really are. You know, and I just, oh my God, right? If you've been to, here's a good AA meeting and you hate it if you're new, if you're like me. What step are you on? What step are you on? Like, how many times did you meet with your, what other meetings are you going to? Do you want to go to one tomorrow night? What step are you on? Like, what is the deal, man? Have you done your fourth step yet? Got to do your fourth step if you want to stay sober. And but so that's, I mean, that's what I would hear right outside of these meetings. And my sponsor, he knew, man, he said, then I'm not going to promise you you're going to get her back or any of that stuff, man. He says, but if we do this stuff and if you do it seeking, really seeking, probably better than your best expectations, he said, you don't got to drink anymore, man. He says, chances are if we can get you away from alcohol long enough and involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, all that other stuff will fall into place. You know, he said, let's put AA first, like our first 10-minute speaker talked about. Let's put AA first and let's let God sort all that other stuff out, right? So we started going through the steps, man, and I hated those group of guys. And I remember it's somewhere around like 8 or 9, right? I'm like, I don't know, somewhere between 60 and 90, maybe 120 days sober, somewhere in there. And I'd done a fourth step, and I started, and a fifth step, and I started to get some relief. And I realized this is Alcoholics Anonymous for me. It's that seconds and inches, right? I remember I'm sitting in that group on Monday night, and I'm looking around the room, and I just remember thinking, like, I don't hate that guy as much tonight. Like, that's weird, you know? It's kind of weird. And, you know, and again, I've been there for like 4 hours, and I said, I think I'll learn his name, you know, because everybody at that meeting, hey, George, and hey, what's up, guy, sport, you know, turbo, because I didn't really want to know any of you people, to be 100% honest, right? If we got along, I have a unique ability, my head tells me, of taking one look at you and seeing if you've got anything to give me or that I might like to take from you. And if you don't fall in that category, we don't really have much to talk about, to be honest. And, you know, it's not very altruistic. And so I did, but that was the shift, right? As I sat there and I started, I just remember, dude, like, I hate these guys a little bit less. And it was a little easier to go to the meeting, man. And I started getting names, and I was running around with some guys. And due to early sobriety, it was really, it's all about getting through that step work, man, because I got to find out these ideas that I have lived with that are like my defense mechanisms or something, right? It's like my weapon against you and the world and the way it mistreats me, right? These are all the behaviors I've learned. And I got to figure out, man, some of that stuff's blocking me off from that thing that's going to keep me from leaving here tonight and taking a drink. I better figure that out. You know, because we learned in the step work, my sponsor, I remember, we're riding in the car, right? And I feared my sponsor and, like, respected him and thought he was mean all at the same time, right? And we're riding in the car, and he's like, hey, so what's the craziest thing you've ever done? And I was, yeah, okay, all right. Let me fire up a good story for you, right? And I'm thinking of, like, the worst night, right? And so I lay that on him, and I remember he just, and he was, look over at him, right, for approval. It's pretty badass, right, John? And he's just shaking his head, you know, and I'm like, what? And he said, you don't get it. He said, you don't get it. He said, the craziest thing you've ever done is after one of those nights, one of those mornings when you've woken up and you're ashamed of what happened the night before and the way that you treated her, and you swore off entirely, and you meant it, right? Not because of her, but one of those times where I went, wow, I don't ever want to do that again, man. I will never do that again. He said, the craziest thing you'll ever do, man, is in a couple weeks, maybe a month. He said, you'll convince yourself why a drink sounds like a good idea. He said, that's what we're dealing with here. He said, that right there. And he said, that power is not going to come from me, and it's not going to come from her, and it's not going to come from your sober living, and it didn't come from the treatment center you went in. You know, he said, you got to find some kind of power to tap into, man, to keep that simple thought from your head that says, dude, you got $100 in the bank, man, and I don't have a curfew tonight at the sober living home. Who's going to know? Right? Right now, I can play the tape through, dude. Are you kidding me? Right? Well, see, I'll shut it off by 12, and I'll sleep, and I'll drink, so I'll hydrate, and I'll come back, and I just won't do that. Right? It'll just be one more time, man. That's insane. It's never been one more time. But that's not what my head tells me when I haven't had some booze in me. It tells me how this time you'll manage better, man. Are you kidding me? And I've got to fight that, right? And that's what the steps help me do, man, is I've got to clear away this stuff that blocks me from God. And it was painful, man. I had a lot of ideas that I think hold me in good stead. And I just have to take a look at my track record, man. 4 and 5, dude. What does that really look like for me on a daily basis in my interactions with people? And the truth I've come to see looking back is I have no idea what to do with anything that's good and loving in my life. The only thing I know how to do with anything or anyone that shows me that kind of stuff is use and abuse it over a period of time. That's it. When I look back, is I don't treat people well. And my sponsor focuses on that a lot. He says we need to build and maintain relationships in Alcoholics Anonymous. Kind of talks about that in the literature too a little bit, if you read it. But so we blasted through those steps, man, and I remember I didn't want to sponsor guys. Didn't want to do it. I got mine. Thanks. I like chairing meetings. You know, I like being around the guys. I like this fellowship. I get it. You get me. When I tell you crazy stuff, you go, yeah, listen to this. And you one-up me, and I love that, right? I'm like, damn, dude, these guys are freaking sick. You know, there's nothing better than sitting outside of a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and just look over at you and go, hey, this is what I was thinking about yesterday, right? How wrong is that? And he's like, this is what I was thinking about this morning. And you're like, damn, dude, we need to pray or something. But but he did. I kid you not, when I got on step 12, before when I was on 11, my sponsor goes, start looking for a new guy. Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll look for new guys, right? I'm going to all these meetings. Yeah, sure, man, I'll say hi to them. And for the next however long it took me to get a sponsee, every day when I would call my sponsor, he would say, you got a new guy yet? Nope, click. Yeah. It's funny for like 7 times, but, you know, after 28 days, and you're, John, I have a problem. Find a new guy. Click. And I'm like, are we not going to fix it? He said, the only thing you need to fix, dude, is you thinking about you. And the easiest way to fix that is go pick up a drunk, dude, and tell him what it was like your first 30 days. See if he wants to do some steps. And I owe that man my life. Owe that man my life, dude. Because life gets really good in Alcoholics Anonymous. Just physically sober, my life will get better, right? But so here's the twist in like what it was like, you know, that's what happened, and then what it's like today and what I'm trying to be like, right, is that spiritual malady I don't hear a lot about in meetings, right? Fancy word, like two cool words that probably I should look up, use together, okay. But I've realized what that looks like in my life, and I can look back over it over relationships, dude, is you could tonight go outside and give me the keys to say a brand new 5.0 Mustang convertible, right? Brand spanking new, rims on it. Hey, man, this is yours, dude. Just take it. Car insurance is paid. I got tags on it for you all for the year. Here you go, man. And I'd be like, damn, dude, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen, right? How lucky am I? And I would sport that thing around. Here's what happens, man. Here's the spiritual malady. When I think I get something that will fix it or that I wanted, that I needed, that I had to have, if that piece was just in place, if I just got the right couch for that new house, I'll pull up to a stoplight. I don't know. Probably wouldn't even take but 3 weeks, dude. And I'll see a newer one in blue. And you gave it to me in red. And what my head will tell me is, see, we're not really that good of friends after all. Blue's my favorite color. You knew that. Why would you not get me a blue one, right? And now it's not a blessing anymore. It's a curse. And now I've built a resentment around a present. That's sick. That's what my head does. And I need to be involved in things that get me away from that. I do. And so, you know, what I'm trying to be like today, man, is really is be able to do the same things that I learned when I got sober. I moved out to Arizona it'll be almost 3 years ago. And got a job making more money than I've ever made in my life. I would never think anyone would offer me that kind of a job and move me, you know, and I'm like, yeah, they're going to move me and they're going to pay for the mover and here we go. And I'm going to take this fire AA from San Diego and just light them up out there. And it's all going to be a cakewalk. And what happens is, yeah, I've got a phone call, right? But you're not connected via phone unless you pick it up. See, and I don't have a core group that I got sober with for 6.5 years. I don't see them on a regular basis. I'm not looking in those dudes' eyeballs to go, hey, man, here's what's really going on. Here's what my head's telling me, right? It's just everything's fine because I've been sober for a while, and it should be okay because I'm sober, right? It's a lot of I should know better, right? And so I start engaging in some selfish and self-centered behaviors, man. And I mean, it can range everything from stopping my daily phone calls and prayer and meditation starts to slip. Not really prayer, but meditation. And right, and I'm busy with work and with this beautiful life Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. And I can do a lot of checklists on the other items. But slowly, very, very slowly, and over a period of probably a year, as I figure out that slowly I'm dying inside, man. And what I'm doing is I'm checking the boxes in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm not seeking. I'm not seeking a connection with my higher power, and I'm not willing to be humbled and inconvenienced as much as I used to when I knew that my life was on the line for this thing, right? And that's a bad place to be, man. But the one thing the guys in my sobriety group, man, and my sobriety brothers and my sponsor is we're transparent with each other, you know? My sponsor tells me all the times, he says, man, we all got clay feet, dude. You know, I'm not perfect. He didn't try and put himself up on a pedestal, and I need to hear that. You know, he tells me about when he's struggling with things and what he's struggling with, man, and we talk about it. And he doesn't tell me I need to stop doing anything anymore. He lets me know when it gets uncomfortable, miss. When it gets uncomfortable enough, he said, you'll change. You might drink in between then. He said, but you'll change. And what it's been about lately is just willing to be transparent with the guys I've been transparent with for a lot of years, and really staying willing to be inconvenienced and taking that extra meeting, dude, and going to the recovery home again on a night that I don't normally go. I have to do that kind of stuff, man. I was working with a guy a couple weeks ago, and like Tuesday night going to see him is like the best night in the world, man. I get to walk into a facility that I, by all rights, should be in. And I get to tell that dude, hey, man, here's how I got out, dude. If you want to do it, let's do it. And I don't tell him he has to do anything. It's not my job to convince him whether he needs to work the steps. But if he's broken enough and he's out of answers, man, I 100% got my hand out and I say, dude, let's go this way. You know, and that's Alcoholics Anonymous, right? That's the language of the heart, is are you done yet? You know, are you done doing it your way enough? And it's been a gift, man. I got a good life. That girl that I tormented for 7 years has come back. She moved back in with me. She didn't want to see me. I couldn't even make amends to her. Couldn't even make amends to her. She didn't want the amends. And the direction was to leave her alone. Pay the money back that I owe her. Pay it with interest because we're not sure how much I took. So I took the number we came up with and I doubled it. Why? Because I want that to be clean. She doesn't have to see me, but I don't want to doubt whether I tried to make it as right as I could with her, right? And that's what the amends really is I have to stop treating other women that way, and I have to try and make that as clean as I can with that lady. And it just happened, you know, a year ago we crossed paths, and she's moved back in, and she brought two terrible, horrible, lovely little dogs into my nice solitude 3-bedroom house. And it's like, boom, instant practice in peace and serenity. You know, here's that blessing you said you always wanted. And, right? It's funny, man, right? But after 3 months, like, you're not new anymore. And, It's a dumb good life, man. The best thing I've ever done in my life is freaking a fourth and a fifth step with my sponsor and sponsoring guys and doing one with him. Hands down, that's the best day's work I've ever done in my entire life. Is the room I sat in a room with that man, and I told him things about myself that I think keeps me different from you. And he shared things about him with me, and I realized I'm not alone. Absolutely not alone. So if you're new tonight, dude, the best thing is, and we love this in alcohol, grab someone after the meeting, grab your sponsor and go, here's my plan. Here's what I've been working on upstairs, man. This is what I'm thinking's going to happen, dude. And if you're willing to listen, you might get some honest feedback that you're probably not going to like. And it's Alcoholics Anonymous, right? We've all got a fork in the road when we leave here tonight, man. Am I going to go my way that I know? Or am I going to give you an opportunity to show me how I might be able to let God in? Which way you want to go? So thanks, guys.